Hello, Paul.
Hi there, yeah.
Hi. For listeners' information, I've got Paul Duffel on the phone, and he is from the Australian Palestinian Advocacy Network. Excuse me.
Yes, thank you very much for having us on the show this morning.
Yes, welcome, yes. And it's our pleasure. So Palestine has been off the agenda for a while. I just thought we should catch up on that particular issue. I wonder if you could give us some updates of what's happening, and also maybe you can talk about how you're intervening in these elections as well. So shall we start with an update? What's happening?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so in an election where really a lot of foreign affairs issues have really featured pretty lightly in the election, you know, there hasn't been too much discussion. There's still been a lot happening around Palestine and a lot happening around our campaign. So for the Australia-Palestine Advocacy Network, we've been running a campaign called I Vote Palestine, and people can go to ivotepalestine.org.au, and we're making it really easy for people to get in touch with their candidates to let them know that Palestine matters and that they vote. And for our campaign there, the basic thing we're asking people to do is to send an email to all their candidates, and so we've made it really easy. People just go to ivotepalestine.org.au, and you'll see there's a pledge that we're asking candidates to sign, and so people can just, with one click of a button, just send that pledge to all of their candidates. And so it's really easy, and we've had some amazing successes so far during the campaign. It's been really, really wonderful, Lalitha. Like, candidates in over 90% of electorates across the country, this is countrywide, have received emails from Palestine supporters letting the candidates know that Palestine matters. And we've had well over 100 candidates have responded to the pledge, and then we've had 56 candidates have signed up to the pledge. So it's been really wonderful, the response that we've been having from the community and also from the candidates as well. When candidates are finding out that their constituents care about Palestine, they've been responding. So that's been wonderful to see.
Mm. So why do you feel that Palestine is important in these elections, Paul? Maybe you can give us a bit of an insight into that.
Well, Palestine is very much an Australian issue. You know, just one statistic for people to remember. Over the last 10 years, the Australian government has spent more than $2 billion. That's right. You heard me right. Billion with a B. $2 billion of Australian taxpayers' money has been spent funding Israeli arms companies on contracts with Israeli arms companies. These are exactly the same Israeli arms companies that are heavily involved in the abuse of the human rights of women, men and children of Palestine. So just one example is Albert Systems. That's an Israeli arms company. And you may have seen there was some media earlier on in the year where a lobbyist hired by Albert Systems called Mary Easton, she was very heavily involved in the recent New South Wales State Labor Convention, where she was working very hard to try and block criticism of Israel's illegal settlements and Israel's human rights abuses. So Mary Easton, she works for a lobbyist of this arms company called Albert Systems, and over the last 10 years, Albert Systems has received over $1.5 billion of Australian taxpayers' money. Albert Systems is heavily involved in abuses of Palestinian human rights and, unfortunately, also violence against Palestinian civilians. Albert Systems' drones were used heavily in Israel's 2014 assault on Gaza, which, of course, killed well over 400 children. Albert Systems also provides electronic spying equipment to the illegal wall that Israel's built throughout the West Bank. So, unfortunately, because of all this, of our taxpayers' money flowing to these arms companies, Palestine is very much an Australian issue. And you also will have seen the big support for Israel that has been coming from the current government as well. You had Attorney General George Brandis claiming that Palestine wasn't even the occupied. And then, of course, you had the Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop, only a few months after she'd become Foreign Minister, claiming that the settlements weren't illegal. So, unfortunately, Australia's heavily involved. Palestine's very much an Australian issue, and that's why we're encouraging people to get in contact with their candidates, let their candidates know that basic human rights of Palestine matters, let their candidates know that Australia shouldn't be wasting taxpayers' money funding these arms companies with these terrible human rights records, and letting their candidates know that they vote. So again, so all people need to do is go to our website, so ivotepalestine.org.au, plug in their details, and then they can send an email to all their candidates. So, so we feel that Palestine is very much an Australian issue. And as I've just mentioned, you know, because of the unfortunate financial political support that our government's providing to Israeli organisations actively involved in human rights abuses, Palestine is very much an Australian issue.
Mm. That was quite a summary there. Now, the other thing I've always wanted to ask someone like you is, you know, how does the ongoing dispute since 1948, since the time decolonization, you know, was at tail end in those times, there has been a problem with this Muslim-Christian dispute, and the Middle Eastern region has been bubbling away with this almost like the aftermath of crusade after a couple of centuries. Has been an ongoing issue. Do you think the issue around the Palestine-Israel dispute has influenced this whole Middle Eastern stuff, other than the oil stuff, of course? But what do you think politically? How much influence do you think this dispute imposes on the problems in the Middle East?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a very complex question, of course. So when we're talking about the Middle East, we're talking about a very diverse, you know, linguistically, religiously, ethnically, culturally, region. So it's a very sort of complex question to talk about how, you know, one particular conflict when, in terms of Israel-Palestine influences the whole region. What we can tell, though, is it seems that a lot of violent groups who will often be involved in violence against Western countries, they'll often use Israel-Palestine as an excuse or as a reason, you know, to sort of motivate and to sort of as ideological fuel, if you like, to support their violence against Western countries. And that's another reason why Israel-Palestine is a really critical Western issue. Of course, we know that looking at the research, and, you know, part of my background as an academic is looking at what are the necessary conditions for effective negotiation and dialogue. And when we look at Israel-Palestine, for example, we see that those important conditions are really, really absent. So, you know, looking over 60 years of research across a whole range of different disciplines and academia and research and expert practitioner insight, we see that one condition for effective peace negotiations stands out really clearly, and that's equal power. And right now, equal power is really not present in the Israel-Palestine situation. And unfortunately, Australia's actions are actually exacerbating that unequal power.
Of course.
By the Australian government providing, as I said, $2 billion over the last 10 years to Israeli arms companies, providing massive political support to Israel and its policies, it's actually exacerbating this unequal power, and it's actually pushing Israelis and Palestinians further and further away from a negotiated peace settlement. So if there could be some improvement in the negotiated peace settlement and dialogue in Israel-Palestine, I'm sure it would have really important reverberations throughout the region in terms of peace and security, not just for us Palestinians, but of course peace and security for Israelis as well. And so that's one of the things that our pledge is calling for, Lalitha, is like support for non-violent activities that help to provide support for a just and peaceful resolution. So we're calling for support for non-violent activities. And because we know when non-violent activities are effective, when they're supported, it helps to defuse the ideological fuel that drives violence, that drives terrorism as well. So by supporting Palestinian non-violence, we're actually also enhancing not just Palestinian but Israeli security. So that's a really important focus for us, and that's really a lot of that comes down to the importance of basic human rights as well.
Of course, and we know that
showing that violence is not the only solution, and
in fact,
not even the most effective or ethical solution. Of course, that non-violence human rights advocacy is effective, and it works. And demonstrating that, and having Australian government support for that, would be a big contribution to ending our Australian government's support for Israeli violence and for really increasing the insecurity.
And of course, the BDS campaign is part of that nonviolent fight back, isn't it? And from what I understand, Israel has been losing to the tune of $4 billion a year on this campaign, even though it has not been as publicly promoted in Australia as elsewhere, like Europe. It's been very big. It has been a very big campaign. And I think you're right. If there is a way of peacefully fighting back, then that keeps the support solid. When there's violence involved, it polarizes people. You know, you can't use violence to fight violence scenario comes in as well. So I think that's a very valid argument. And the BDS campaign, how is it going in Australia? I haven't heard much about the results of the campaign here.
Well, the thing about any boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign, you know, the essence of any boycott is about withdrawing support. So, you know, so the first question we need to ask when we're implementing, when we're looking at a boycott campaign, when we're analysing a boycott campaign in, say, for example, Australia, is what support is Australia providing for violence in Israel and Palestine?
Mm.
And what we can tell, for as far as we can tell from the information available, the Australian government doesn't provide any support for Palestinian violence. However, when we look at Israeli violent groups, for example, I just mentioned Albert Systems, for example,
yep,
we know that there's massive Australian taxpayer-funded money going in contracts to support these Israeli arms companies and the Israeli government. Of course, the Israeli government's actively involved in a range of human rights abuses against Palestinians. So the first thing we need to look at, okay, so boycotts are about withdrawing that support. We're thinking, how do we withdraw that support, you know? And this is really where it comes back to our campaign here,
yep,
the ivotepalestine.org.au campaign, is we're asking our candidates to unequivocally support the basic human rights of Palestinians and Israelis and to support peace and to recognise Palestine and to really withdraw that political support that the Australian government has been providing for the Israeli government and for the Israeli government's policies. So, you know, boycott, divestment, sanctions is an important campaign because not because Australia isn't involved and because we need to become more involved, but because Australia is already involved and it has a historical involvement in Israel-Palestine as well. I mean, you'll recall, of course, you know, like we were talking about the, you know, the violence going back to 1948, you know, mm, and, you know, perhaps even earlier than that, you know, the UN Partition Plan of 1947, the first country to vote in favour of that was, of course, Australia. So Australia has been heavily involved in the Israel-Palestine conflict, even before the creation of the modern state of Israel.
Hmm.
So it's very much an Australian issue. So that's why I would encourage people to go to ivotepalestine.org.au and send this pledge to all their candidates, asking their candidates to support basic human rights and international law regarding Israel-Palestine and to support non-violent activities.
And I have to say, as most of the listeners of the program that I do here know that I'm a candidate, and I've been answering a lot of emails about Palestine, I can tell you that.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
So I've been very, very busy on the computer. Now, the other issue is, you know, that I guess exasperates me, to put it succinctly, is that the fact that Australia seems to tail end the US on this foreign policy area, and Palestine is like stands out like a sore thumb, never mind anybody else, but this has been in a long-term massacre, genocide really, of the Palestinian people. Is there anything you want to say? I mean, we've got another couple of minutes about this tendency to always tail end the US and not standing up for Australia as it is, while not going stretching it as far as huge nationalistic question, but the fact that our politicians don't seem to have the gumption to get up and say, no, we're not funding violence, has always amazed me. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, my beliefs and, you know, and the practices of the Australia-Palestine Advocacy Network, you know, is we're big believers in evidence-based policy. So if you're going to build a policy in relation to a complex violent conflict, you need to do your homework, you need to look at the evidence. What does the evidence tell us about what will be an effective policy? And so I just mentioned, you know, before the importance of the balance of power in terms of effective peace negotiations in Israel and Palestine. So that's one obvious, you know, important part of evidence-based policy, that we need to look at how do we reduce this massive power disparity between Israelis and Palestinians, and, of course, ending Israel's illegal occupation of Palestinian territory is, of course, one beginning in that. Another aspect of evidence-based policy, which I think is absolutely critical to your, you know, to your question about Australia's own security and the degree that it's tied to the US, is that when we look at research, and there's a wonderful researcher who's came out of Chicago, a guy by the name of Robert Pape, and he's an expert in terrorism. And he looks at the causes of terrorism, and he's written a couple of wonderful books looking at the drivers and causes of suicide terrorism, you know, the most egregious form of terrorism. And what he finds is that the one common factor that drives suicide terrorism is when the terrorists feel that their own country is occupied by a foreign power, particularly when that foreign power is a democracy, and particularly when there's a religious difference with that foreign power.
Mm.
So he finds the critical factor in driving suicide terrorism, it's not ideology, it's not religion, it's not class, or it's not ethnicity, or it's not the economic status of the suicide terrorist, it's foreign occupation.
Yep.
So if we're serious about preventing terrorism against countries like Australia and our allies, we need to, you know, we need to do our homework. We need to face up to the facts about what actually drives that terrorism, even if it's going to challenge our own pre-existing views, you know?
So, good point.
And so the reality is that occupation drives suicide terrorism. It's the most significant driver of suicide terrorism. And that's across, you know, all cases of suicide terrorism, whether we're looking at, for example, what's been happening in Sri Lanka or Israel-Palestine or, you know, other countries.
Well, colonization. So, colonization is a big factor in this. But anyway.
And that's the thing, isn't it? So, you know, so in terms of enhancing, or even if we're just talking about enhancing Australia's own security, then ending occupation is absolutely critical. And then, of course, that comes back to Israel-Palestine, doesn't it? You know,
yeah,
because
exactly.
We know that since 1967, the Palestinians have been under illegal occupation by the Israelis.
Yep.
And so that's why it's absolutely critical that Australian politicians and candidates use their voice to call for an end to the occupation, and that constituents, local constituents, you know, we're all local constituents for our candidates, send a quick email to their candidates, letting them know that basic human rights in Palestine matters, and that they vote, and then asking their candidates to take a principled, sensible, and actually safe stand. It's actually safe for Australia to take a stand. It's safer to take for Australia to take a stand in support of basic human rights in Palestine.
So
I'd really urge people to go to this ivotepalestine.org.au, plug in your details, send an email. It only takes about 30 seconds. We know people are very busy, you know, so we want to just make it really easy.
Sure.
And we really want to help to close this gap between, because we know there's emerging, growing support within Australia. You know, we've seen that from opinion poll after opinion poll. There's emerging support, growing support for, you know, amongst Australia, amongst the grassroots for basic human rights in Palestine. And so we're working to close that gap. There's a democracy gap regarding Israel, Palestine, and Australia. We're working to close that gap to let candidates know that Palestine matters for their local constituents, and that candidates need to do the right thing. They need to act in support of Australia's security, and also basic human rights in Palestine, and also Israel's security. So
thank
I'd encourage
you.
Everyone to go to ivotepalestine.org.au and get involved. It would be wonderful to have your support. We've been having the support of so many people across Australia. You know, like as I mentioned, over candidates and over 90% of electorates across the country have received emails through our campaign. We've had over 50 candidates sign the pledge, which is wonderful. And and it's just going to be getting stronger and stronger as we build up for the election coming up on the 2nd of July.
Okay, let's finish up on that because we are badly over time. Thank you so much, Paul. That was very informative and refreshing. And we'll talk again in the future as things roll on and develop further. Thanks, Paul.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Bye.